Hello everyone. So nice to see you again. I have the pleasure and the honor to introduce you to Professor Chaim Jacobi, a professor of development planning at the Bartlett Development Planning Unit at UCL. With a background in architecture, he specialized in critical urban studies and urban health. Between 2006 and 2007, he was a Fulbright postdoctoral fellow at the Center for Middle Eastern Studies at the University of California in Berkeley, and then joined the Department of Politics and Government at Ben Gurion University in Be'er Sheva. For the years 2010 to 12, he received a Marie Curie grant, which has enabled him to work at Cambridge University, where he conducted a research project that dealt with contested cities. The main issues that stand in the center of his research interest in relation to the urban space, in the relation to the urban space, are social justice, the politics of identity, urban health, and colonial planning. In 1999, he formulated the idea of establishing BIMKOM, Planning in Human Rights, an NGO that deals with human rights and planning in Israel-Palestine, and was its co-founder. Currently, he holds, together with Professor Omar Dajani, a UKRI ESRC grant, the Shared Homeland Paradigm, Reimagining Space Rights and Partnership in Palestine-Israel. And I'm really happy to have you here. Thank you so much.
Again, welcome back.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Yeah,
I will come next time in 8 years,
No, much
just before retiring, you know.
better.
Thank you very much, David and Yaakov, for the invitation, and thank you all for coming, in a kind of post-lunch time, which is always difficult. What I'm trying to do today is to, following David's introduction, I think, what I'm trying to do is to bring my previous work into my current project on a shared homeland paradigm. And I will read and talk from time to time. So I'm presenting this paper during a terrible time of violence, war crimes, and uncertainties. I'm trying to find some hope. Hope means looking at the reality created, at the histories and geographies of power in Palestine, Israel, which carries profound ethical weight, questioning my own position. Writing this paper and stating that we should look at Palestine, Israel as an urban question, an issue that I will discuss later, demands a confrontation with atrocity and resisting silence or denial. This text is not merely scholarly, but rather a moral action, putting mixed cities within the colonial framework. In times of the abuse of rights, academic work should serve at least as testimony and a platform to thinking forward. David Harvey, a well-known geographer, argues that the process of urbanization is not neutral, but rather it is shaped by the dynamics of capital accumulation and class relations. Such Marxist approach dominated the field of urban studies, which framed the urban question, a term that David Harvey developed, around who controls urban development and for whose benefit urban spaces. While this argument is still valid today, it seems that it overlooks some wider power structures, such as colonialism, nationalism, and racism, which were later located in the core of critical urban studies. Today, I would like to frame Palestine-Israel as an urban question due to several reasons. First, the Israel-Palestine conflict, I don't like the term conflict, but the Israel-Palestine reality is often framed through macro geopolitics, religious or historical lenses, overlooking the micro spaces created within the colonial power, such as urban territories. Secondly, urbanization in Israel-Palestine is deeply politicized, polarized along different attributes such as infrastructure, housing, land, and distribution of urban goods. Finally, Despite of being contested, cities provide spaces of encounter between Israelis and Palestinians, within the Green Line, as well as in East Jerusalem and even in some parts of the West Bank. And while these spaces are often operating within unequal power relations, these might be the potential spaces of transformation, reconciliation, and decolonization. Today, I will focus on what is widely defined as mixed cities, a term that describes situations in which Jewish and Arab Palestinians communities occupy the same urban territory in Israel, mainly within Israel. The term mixed might suggest some integration, while instead the reality is controversial. In other words, the term mixed city raises images of mutual membership while ignoring questions of power, oppression, and resistance. As in other cases of settler colonialism, a clear spatial and mental division exists between Arab and Jews within Israel, and hence the occurrence of mixed spaces is both exceptional and involuntary. Rather, it has resulted from a historical process during which the Israel-Palestine territory, including cities that were previously Palestinian, such as Lida, Lod, Elid, that you see here in the day of occupation, has been Judaized. I identify three main types of mixed cities. The first refers to cities such as Haifa, where Jews and Arabs lived under the same municipality before the establishment of the State of Israel. The second includes cities such as Ramla, Akka, Jaffa, Lod, Lid, that were Palestinian cities before the Nakba and became dominated by Jewish migrants after the establishment of the state. A third category, which is very much ignored, I think, in the public discourse, refers to new Judaizing towns that were established post-48 for the Jewish population, such as Carmiel, Upper Nazareth, and even East Jerusalem after 67, and that have, against the settler colonial logic, accommodate in the last few decades Palestinians. So I guess those who follow the news know about, you know, the last visit of Naftali Bennett in Omer, which is the richest Jewish suburb in Israel, I think, trying to point on, you know, Bedouin families that infiltrated, as he said, into the Jewish suburb. Some theory. Political philosophy discusses the notion of the city as a political entity and traces the very idea of democracy to the setting of an urban community stretching back to ancient Athens, through medieval cities, and to the recent flourishing industrial cities of the West. The notion of the polis, as Hannah Arendt puts it, is a political metaphor for urban life. The polis, she says, is not the city-state in its physical location. It is the organization of the people, as it arises out of acting and speaking together. And its true space lies between people living together for this purpose. So I think it's a very strong idea about what urban life is about. In a similar line, Ira Katzenelson, again a political scientist, develops the links between urbanism and liberalism and finds that the actual city space, with its typical density, diversity, size, and flows, has been an essential platform for the translation of liberal ideas to actual practices. Cities are open to flows of people, capital, communication, and ideas. Without this dynamism, liberalism's insistence on human autonomy and choice would have been merely speculative. Liberalism was inconceivable without the urbanization which became the location for political emancipation and free citizenship. So I think, you know, these are two very strong quotations that for me really define what cities or what urban life is about. It's really about the ability of people to encounter each other. Cities, indeed, are considered the locus of establishing the notion of citizenship, while on the other hand, urban landscapes are also characterized by being polarized and exclusionary. In cities, people must often step outside the law to gain access to basic rights. Conditions linked with urban poverty, violence, and colonialism are often interlinked and specially expressed in urban enclaves, such as the one you can see here from Silwan. It's a village neighborhood in East Jerusalem. These enclaves are frequently omitted from formal city maps and are categorized by the authorities as illegal settlements, such as in the case of Palestinian East Jerusalem. These places are also treated as signifier of the socially constructed and demonized image of the other. So I think it contradicts very much the notion of urban life that I've mentioned before. Importantly, a central issue that frames the production of mixed cities is the notion of the settler colonialism. Settler colonial society is based on a project of settling newcomers on contested frontiers to achieve political control over those spaces, as well as access to key resources. Settler colonial societies may be external or internal. The former relates to organized movement of people across borders, often into other continents, as in the period of European colonialism. The latter refers to the planned ethnicization of internal frontiers in which the state manipulates the local geography to further the interest of a dominant ethnic group. Different researchers identified Israel with the social and spatial patterns that characterize the settler colonial model. And here I can mention Yiftach Allen Kedar, Shafir, and so on and so forth. And what is very important within the Israeli settler colonial context to understand is that these hierarchies are within the Jewish society, of course, Ashkenazi Jews, Mizrahi Jews, Russian migrants, Ethiopian migrants, non-Jewish migrants, which are not Jewish, as well as within the Palestinian community. We have Palestinians who are Israeli citizens. We have Palestinians in East Jerusalem who are residents of Jerusalem and can vote theoretically to the local municipality, but not to the parliament, the Israeli Knesset. We have Palestinians in the West Bank that have no citizenship and no Jerusalem residential ID. And I would argue that we also have the Gazans, Palestinians in Gaza, who were in the last 20 years, and especially during the last 2 years, were put and constructed in the very bottom of this hierarchy. And I think you can understand that this citizenship hierarchy is also expressed in space and territory, where each group is located and under which limitations, I would say. So mixed cities often reflect the wider settler colonial conflict. As I've mentioned before, when the Palestinians in Lod were expelled, Jews were settled by the state, mainly Mizrahi Jews were settled by the state in Lod in order to keep it Jewish. Urban politics usually revolve around struggles for space, economic resources, and political power, most commonly along ethno-national lines. However, and this is very important argument, mixed cities never fully replicate the dynamics of the wider conflict, mainly because the urban arena is governed by a combination of powers, regulations, and forces, including, I would say, resistance, that are different from the ones in non-urban regions. And I think this is very much linked to my understanding of urban spaces. Urban spaces, some negotiations are taking part there in a different way than in the national level. The planning and implementation of frontier settlements in Israel is considered one of the highest achievements of the state of Israel, and in some respects the entire country became a frontier. And I think in the last 2 years we can see it, how the frontier areas in the north, you know, I think the whole thesis of putting people on the frontier in order to protect the territory collapsed in the last 2 years. The fact that, you know, I would say the majority of people of Israelis didn't return back to the north is one of the signs of it, as well as to those who didn't return to the Gaza envelope. And I think, in a way, it's a very interesting thing. You know, I don't want to develop it here, but I think it's a very interesting observation, because historically, that's the DNA of the Israeli territory, to settle people along the borders in order to protect the core of the territory. And I think in the last 2 years, we see something different. And this idea stems from the Sharon plan, the first master plan that was designed to Israel. And I don't want to go into details, but the whole idea of the Sharon plan was to spread the population within the territory, especially along the borders. And here I would like to refer to an amazing article by Adriana Kemp, an Israeli sociologist, who wrote about the border in the north and how Jewish settlers that were settled by the state were trying to leave the border zone and were forced to stay there. So I think there's a whole issue here that is very interesting. The planning and implementation of frontier settlement is considered one of the highest achievements of the state of Israel, as I said. And I would argue that the whole idea is that the whole country, the whole territory became a frontier. In this context, the idea of the frontier was also alive in Israel's mixed cities such as Lod and Ramle, which are in the very core of the Israeli territory, especially in the planning discourse, which commonly spoke about the necessity to build Jewish housing and only Jewish housing on or immediately next to Arab urban neighborhoods. My work on Lod, on the Jewish Arab mixed city of Lod, shows it very, very clearly. In all plans of all mixed cities, and I say it with great responsibility, specific goals appear around, and I quote, keeping the Jewish character and of combating the danger of increasing Palestinian population, which might create, again, a quotation, a demographic threat to the city. So this is, you know, the political approach that is linked to space and territory in the cities. This rationale received stark physical expression in mixed urban areas such as Akko, Haifa, Jaffa, Ramla, and Lod, that where high-density Jewish neighborhoods, such as the one you can see here from the archive, were rapidly constructed around the small Arab enclaves. And in a very interesting way, the Arab enclaves in historical documents, as Benny Norielli also writes about, often called the Arab ghetto. That was their names also on maps. And they were left in what were previously Palestinian cities. Arab presence was thus delegitimized and constantly portrayed as a danger, causing deep patterns of planning discrimination. As I elaborated elsewhere, during the past two decades, the urban processes focus on demographic control, as well as on intensifying militarization and a growing use of state violence, which transform mixed cities into an urban apartheid-like spaces. In our market-driven neoliberal era, urban apartheid should be taken as a distinct regime based on urban trends such as privatization of space, gentrification, urban design, and infrastructure development. These practices substitute for explicit apartheid legislation, which is based on law, as we know from the South African case, bringing to the fore new participants in the apartheidization of the city, such as real estate developers and various interest groups. For example, it's very, you know, it's very vocal, I would say, in the case of East Jerusalem, that radical right-wing settlers organizations became the arm of the government and the municipality in Judaizing spaces through mechanisms of, you know, urban development, urban design. Let's make, you know, let's pave Silwan in a way that it will look like Nachlat Shiva in Jerusalem, while at the same time there is an infiltration of settlers into the Palestinian village. I guess that those who follow the news are very, very much aware of it. So my argument that we need to start and understand the relationship between the colonial, that settler colonial logic, and the neoliberal logic or super capitalist logic, I think that's what I'm trying to do. Because my argument stems from the fact that contested urbanism, which is a famous topic in the literature, has been studied along two separated lines, which are often understood as contradicting each other and studied separately. One is the ethno-national contested cities. For example, those who studied Jerusalem as a divided or contested city only along ethno-national or colonial lines. And the other is the neoliberal city. And I would argue that what we can see in Israel-Palestine these days is a combination of these two vectors working together, not one against the other, but working together. In the format that dominates the discourse, the contested urbanism, the first generation of literature on the Jerusalem conflict, for instance, focused on the city being divided as a top-down subject of Israeli colonial aspirations. This literature analyzed the power of the state from the perspective of its legislative, planning, and military mechanism, which is true, but not enough to understand the urban processes. Some researchers, such as Mick Damper, offer a more nuanced understanding of urban processes, presenting Jerusalem as an arena of highly charged power relations, a contested space that is continuously produced and reproduced by bottom-up protest and giving agency to Palestinians, to global forces, and wide spectrum of political institutions. Here, I don't want to go into details, but just to give you an idea, because I'm moving now to East Jerusalem, which is, I think, a fascinating laboratory of colonial planning. And I identify four stages. The first one, immediately after 67, what I define as legal planning, the land appropriation, Palestinian land appropriation, which meant taking land without Palestinians as much as possible and creating a very weird municipality border to the city of Jerusalem. So legal planning was very, very important, transferring Palestinian private land into state land. The second stage is the intensive creation, construction, design of colonial neighborhoods or settlements that now, and I think this is the success of the Israeli colonial project in East Jerusalem, neighborhoods that are part of the structure of the city, Gilo, Ramot, Talpiot Mizrach, Givat Zarfatit, Pisgat Zev, you'll name it. The investment in designing and constructing these neighborhoods is part of the city structure, including infrastructure, such as the light rail, is a very central, I think, element in the success of making East Jerusalem into the unified capital. The third stage from the year 2000, more or less, is the construction of the separation wall, which has been sold to the Israeli public as a security element. I would argue, and I wrote quite extensively about it, that it has nothing to do with security. The idea is to put facts on the ground, territorial facts on the ground, and to establish the borders of Jerusalem to the future. And I think the last stage that I've hinted on, and we are witnessing it these days, is the frontierization of core neighborhoods, Palestinian core neighborhoods within Jerusalem, such as Silwan, such as Sheikh Jarrah, and the infiltration and the settlement of settlers within these neighborhoods, the sometimes legal, sometimes illegal appropriation of Palestinian property, So we can see, what I'm trying to show is that we need to understand the process, but we can also see how things are not separated, okay? Because, you know, okay, I will say it in a minute. So some of the processes discussed in the literature can be seen as even more radicalized. Over the last few years, group of Jewish settlers have colonized new houses in mixed cities, not just in East Jerusalem. I don't know if you know what's going on in Acca or in Lida, you know, that Garinim Toranim, that, I don't know how do you say Garinim Toranim, but groups of settlers moving from Hebron to settle in Lod, for example. I found a very interesting document. They get land or property for free from the government in order to Judaize or to keep the demographic balance in the cities. So, for example, in Jerusalem's Palestinian neighborhoods, and they also settle, as I mentioned, in Sheikh Jarrah and Silwan, Israeli military forces and Palestinian protesters alike were involved in escalating tensions and clashes around mixed cities. But the logic behind the increased security measures failed to solve the conflict. That's one of the important arguments. And instead, what we are witnessing is a process of apartheidization. So at the same time, we can see a kind of infiltration of settlers that obviously with all the power they have and the government and the municipality have, they cannot totally occupy, you know, Palestinian neighborhoods. But I would argue that what we can see here is a new regime of urban apartheid. But in parallel to the top-down politics, we need to understand the urban dynamics at play by looking at a set of interventions, for example, such as Palestinians moving to dwell in neighborhoods that were planned for Jewish population only. In Jerusalem, you know, I wrote quite extensively on how Palestinians are moving to French Hill or Pisgat Zehev, that are two settlements within Jerusalem, not just renting, but even buying property. This is a, you know, very interesting process that, you know, happens under the radar. There are different tactics of Palestinians to rent or to buy property, but I think it's a very interesting process that, you know, since I've started investigating it a decade ago or a bit more than a decade ago, the numbers are growing. It's very difficult to put hands on the exact numbers because some of them, we did, you know, a very interesting exercise counting, you know, in Israel, you are allowed, as opposed to the UK, people put their name on doors or at the entrance door or on the mailbox. So, you know, we were trying to count Arab names and Jewish names. So in some parts of French Hill, Arabs had no issue to put their names, you know, on the mailbox, for example. That was, you know, for itself an interesting phenomenon. I also work with Gabriel Schwake on how Arabs from the Galilee are moving to Upper Nazareth, a town that by definition was established in order to Judaize the Galilee. And it's, again, it's a very interesting process because, I don't know, to those who know the work of Dani Rabinovich, I think one of the most interesting anthropologists in Israel, he wrote a very interesting article, To Sell or Not to Sell, the dilemmas of Israeli Jews who wants to sell their property in Nazareth to Arabs. And I would argue that Danny's work is back, you know, to the 90s, I think. But these days, I think the question is to buy or not to buy. Because, you know, we interviewed some Palestinians who want to buy property in Jewish neighborhoods, and they raised a lot of questions about what's the meaning of living in a city. Do you live only in your house? You have a shelter? Public spaces, education. So I think it's a very interesting process to follow from the 90s up to these days. And what I find very interesting is that most interviewees said that, you know, they moved to Jewish neighborhoods for banal or, you know, neutral reason. They just want to improve the quality of their life. It doesn't matter if it's Palestinians who moved to French Hill or to Upper Nazareth or to Carmiel. But I would argue that at the same time that, you know, they declare that, you know, their movement is just, you know, to improve their life, the quality of their life, I would argue that at the same time, their movement is part of the territorial struggle for control and belonging. And I think it can link us, you know, to the idea of Hannah Arendt and Ira Katzenelson about what is a city? What's the meaning of urban life? Can a Jewish town be considered as a city? I would argue that no. I think, you know, the notion of the city, the essence of the city is diversity. As discussed so far, mixed cities are a messy project that operates on various scales that both contrast and intersect. What emancipatory powers can we identify in the apartheid city? It is a hard question. To what degree does the movement of Palestinians into Jewish districts truly enable mobility within the settler colonial reality? And at the very least, it emphasized the importance of evaluating the unintended consequences of the neoliberal ideology that dominates the urban transformation of the city and the scalar dimensions with which we evaluate the shape and form of apartheid today. Here, I don't want to go into details. If you want, you know, I'm happy to send you the full reference. What we were trying to see is to examine the presence of Palestinians in West Jerusalem, one of the most controlled spaces, I would say. And what we, not surprisingly, discover is that more and more Palestinians are taking part in the West Jerusalem labor market. You can see it here. The salaries are improving, but obviously always with a gap comparing to the Jewish population. So, you know, we can see, you know, the apartheid-like element here. We can also see what kind of occupation most of them are dealing with, obviously services, industry, etc. But we've also mapped, you know, the presence of Palestinians in the city, in the western part of the city. And you can see that it's very much linked to education and employment hubs. You know, just this Palestinian lady who is picking olives in Rehavia, which is in the, you know, the icon of Jewish West Jerusalem. And also you can see here a very disturbing map of Irgun Lahava. Lahava is a radical right-wing racist organization, that the presence of Palestinian workers in Machane Yehuda market in West Jerusalem is very problematic for them. So they went and they mapped who employs Palestinians. So I had like a real ethical issue whether or not I should use this map. So that's why, you know, I'm telling you who produced it. But I think those of you who walk around Machane Yehuda market, they will certainly see Palestinians working there. And I would argue that this is exactly, or here stands the very characteristics of the mixed apartheid city. On the one hand, there is a constant tension between the desires of the state, of the Israeli state, to fully control space and the ongoing increased presence of Palestinians in everyday life and different urban spheres. And this tension, stemming from the very nature of the urban, as we know from Arendt and Katznelson, such as, you know, so this nature is expressed in individuals' aspiration to improve housing conditions, employment opportunities, education, etc. And, you know, the fact that there is a growing number of Palestinians studying in the Hebrew University of Jerusalem. In, I think it's a very interesting phenomena. The university, you know, refers to them as clients. You know, they come, they pay, they get excellent service. But I think it means something more significant. It also enables them better mobility later, and there are some interesting research. There is some interesting research that was done on it. So basically, what I'm trying to do here is to point on a paradox of colonial urbanism in Israel-Palestine. The forceful effect of the banalization of occupation in East Jerusalem and the West Bank, and even within the Green Line, was orchestrated by Israeli law, planning, and state regulations that privilege Jewish citizens. And this, you know, this is obvious, I hope. But the question to be asked are whether these processes are reversible. Can we imagine a bi-national shared city future based on equal terms administrated by a decentralized urban federal type democratic regime? Why don't we start the process of decolonization and reconciliation in urban settings where everyday life of Israelis and Palestinians, despite of being rooted in colonial context, are intermingled? Instead, as we know, for example, from the Oslo Accord, the urban question, as I name it, has been left unanswered. And it has been left, you know, like as part of, you know, the big issues, Jerusalem, refugees, settlement, security arrangements, borders, etc., etc. All these issues are considered as something that will be solved at the end. And basically what I'm trying to suggest is that we need, you know, to flip it upside down. We need to start from the urban and move to the national. Across the world, several cities have emerged as examples of peace building and reconciliation following periods of severe conflict, violence, and division. In South Africa, Cape Town and Johannesburg played central roles in the Truth and Reconciliation Commission, which sought to address the injustices of apartheid through restorative justice. Kigali, Rwanda, became a site of national recovery after the 1994 genocide, employing community-based courts to promote accountability and unity. Belfast, in Northern Ireland, has advanced peace through inter-community dialogue and integrated education in the aftermath of sectarian violence. Medellin, Colombia, transformed its image from one of urban violence to social inclusion through innovative planning and community engagement, while Sarajevo, Bosnia and Herzegovina, has promoted coexistence and intercultural understanding after the Bosnian War. So cities play a key role in conflict, and I would argue also in reconciliation. No doubt, a good political will on both sides is essential, enabling the decolonization of space and governance, power sharing and reconciliation. This is indeed the agenda of our new ambitious three-year project that we'll pursue in collaboration with ALFA, A Land for All, a political initiative advocating a vision of two states, one homeland. And one of the few popular movements in Palestine, Israel, whose leadership and members are drawn from across both nations. The project will help to develop a new conceptual basis for configuring space and rights in Palestine, Israel, and build practical scenarios that chart a path from the current one-state reality to a two-state confederation built upon the values of equality, mutual self-determination, liberty of movement, and genuine inter-ethnic partnership. I just want to, you know, to wrap up with an outline or, you know, a sketch of my idea. Bringing these ideas to the mixed urban territories should be based on three principles. One, the demarcation of a shared metropolis for example, in the case of Jerusalem, or shared mixed municipalities, let's imagine about Lod, Yaffa, Tel Aviv, and Ramlah, within the Green Line, under a joint Israeli and Arab sovereignty, and the formation of institutions that will enable these urban territories to function, because I would argue that currently they don't function. The creation of decentralized system of sub-municipalities or sub-districts to manage the daily urban life in the neighborhoods which make up these urban territories. In Lod, for example, you have neighborhoods that they don't have schools where children can learn, can study in Arabic. Okay, so I think we need to start reimagine, you know, the future of these urban spaces. And also the definition of small area around shared heritage sites, such as the Old City in Jerusalem. But as you know, this territory is full of heritage sites. That this needs to be managed by shared councils to be also responsible on the holy site, for example, and hopefully to be composed of both local and international religious representatives. So as I said, you know, this is not a solution to the conflict right now. This is just another way to try and to look at the urban processes in Israel-Palestine, not as a problem, but as a potential solution. Thank you.